Ryan and Jay here on The Rush. It's great to have you in this afternoon on a show where some people have called for me to be fired. Others have called for me to run Hydro One. So, you know, I'm pretty much hitting on all cylinders this afternoon. Christy Blatchford is here from The National Post. Christy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you.
Oh, lovely to be had.
Amanda Galbraith is here from Navigator. Great to see you and talk to you.
Thanks for having us.
Our buddy Trevor Mayo is here. Great to have you, sir.
Howdy.
Let's start off with Hydro One. The board members of the Ontario Power Utility voted to boost compensation for their own part-time jobs, $185,000 a year, at a time when the company's share price was falling. The revelation comes amid Ontario's election, of course, where the hot issues include the price of electricity and one candidate, Doug Ford, who says he'd fire the lot of them.
When people are struggling to pay their hydro bills, they're in tears coming to me. They have the nerve to increase their compensation. Now, remember, folks, if you can relate to this, a part-time job, they were making $160,000. They gave themselves a pay increase up to $185,000. Who does that? Who does that? This is a waste of taxpayers' money. This is the reason the board's going, the CEO is going. That's unacceptable.
Christy, I've been saying this afternoon that I believe that that is a false correlation. I don't think that if you get rid of a CEO and a board of directors that much is going to change with your hydro bills. There are bigger underlying issues, mismanagement being one of them on the part of the Liberal government, that have increased people's hydro bills. This is nothing more than symbolism and finding a scapegoat.
Well, it may well be, but it's a pretty good scapegoat if you're looking for one. The better answer may be the NDP's answer, which is to buy back the shares that were sold to private shareholders, to buy those shares back and, you know, put the Hydro One back in public hands wholly again, because then the government can. Somebody asked, I think the CEO before privatization made $400,000 or $500,000 a year, and now the CEO makes $6.2 million in salary and bonuses. So something big has changed. And you know, I also struggle with the notion of the chair of a board now getting $330,000 a year, and the board members $185,000 a year. And it seems as though no one is immune to the lure of filthy lucre.
Yeah, it is interesting because, Amanda, when you look at it, the people who voted, the shareholders, 92% of the ones that did vote, voted in favor of the raise. The Ontario government, which is the largest shareholder in Hydro One, 47%, they abstained. They stayed on the sidelines in this.
Yeah, I think this whole thing is a bit of a mess, frankly, and probably political gold for Doug Ford, as we've seen today. I think he's capitalized on it well. I'm not convinced that buying back the shares, I can't imagine how much money that would cost, frankly, to put sort of the genie back in the bottle. I do think that, you know, if you're going to be a privately run company, you need to be competitive in the landscape. But that being said, like, have some sense. Don't vote raises for yourself or put forward raises in the middle of an election cycle. Don't hold your AGM in the middle of an election cycle. Like, just the kind of the decisions they're making are just crazy to me. And I think, you know, Doug Ford's going to run all over this all week.
Trevor, I still see what Amanda's saying. What I hear here is more of optics, though, yeah. Not getting people's hydro bills down.
Yeah, I mean, so this is actually how the private sector works. You know what I mean? Like, the executives vote for the raises all the time. The shareholders decide if it's appropriate or not. Sometimes it's in a really bad environment. You know, And unfortunately, I mean, this is a time where the populace is very tuned in and very aware of the compensation, and they're not seeing value for this compensation. I think that's the big problem. I mean, I've been to a number of AGMs where you've had senior leadership actually vote for their own raise. You had Barrick Gold a number of years ago when they were actually on their heels and retreating in global in the global environment, and yet they had a massive double-digit raise for their senior leadership, and the shareholders said, no, you're not performing for us. You do not deserve that in this year. And it'd be nice to see if that actually was the response, saying, you know, I mean, hydro rates are going up. You've not modernized the system where we'd actually expect it to go with this type of privatization. And frankly, you need to actually earn that money and show that you're actually deriving value from your compensation. Unfortunately, they didn't do that right now. So I think it is a big optics challenge from this cycle.
It's interesting. Well, sorry, go ahead, Christy.
The shareholders do reap benefits from this new Hydro One, though. I mean, they get paid dividends, and Hydro One, this is the part that I confess I struggle as a math moron to understand. How is it that so many people can't afford to pay their hydro bills, and yet Hydro One says, you know, we've reduced the cost to our consumers by 31%? I mean, I know I'm dopey, but holy smokes.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things that are attached to your hydro bill still aren't perfectly explained. And I think that there are so many other charges rather than just the cost. Hydro can say, yeah, well, we've reduced the cost, but that doesn't count and take into account the other things that surround it, you know, carrier charges and all sorts of different charges.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah,
part,
that are linked to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I find my hydro bill really confusing. Listen, like, I support this government. I was not super on fan with this, but I'm now starting to understand this move a little bit more. And I find it tough to swallow. So I agree with you on that.
Let's move on to Alberta. The Alberta parents of a child who died of bacterial meningitis are calling it a victory for parental rights in Canada.
We feel very vindicated. We're extremely grateful. We're grateful because this is a move in the right direction. And we now have the opportunity to bring the whole truth forward. And we're just so excited to have the ability to do that and to be able to uphold parental rights here in Canada.
That is the voice of the father, gross, David Steffen, who has been granted a new trial after the Supreme Court ruled in the favor of these parents that the previous trial judge did not properly instruct jurors on the medical evidence. This was the story of 19-month-old Ezekiel, who died in 2012 when his dad and mom, who you just heard from, used homemade remedies, Christy, like garlic and horseradish, rather than seeking out a doctor.
No, I agree. And look, it sounds as though the trial judge messed up the instructions to the jury. The Supreme Court says they did, or he did, and that there should be a new trial. That's fine. I agree with that, because anybody who is improperly convicted deserves a new trial. But I would hardly call it vindication, as the father did. And I would hardly be giving interviews sort of celebrating what he calls his vindication when it's all about your dead child.
Yeah, your face said it all, Amanda, in the room, because he sounds kind of strident and just like, oh, look at, we won here. It was a big victory. Yeah, your kid's dead.
Your victory is over your child's dead body. Like, that is horrible. I can't even fathom what would make a person speak in that manner. I mean, and the story, if anyone recall, I think I ended up commenting on this at the time. Like, by the time they got the little kid to the hospital, like, his body was stiff. He couldn't move. Like, it was a horrible story, which I think was totally not responsible as a parent. And you know, these guys can call it whatever they want, fair enough. Like, the judicial system should be treated responsibly. If they had bad instructions, they should trial it over again. But this is not a victory for this family, and I just feel bad for that kid.
I find the whole parental rights like incredibly offensive out of this, because what from what I read, and Chris, you could probably speak to it more intelligently, but from what I read in terms of what the justices said, the panel said on this, it was more procedural. Even in their appeal back out west earlier, when was it, last year, whatever, that even said that no, it wasn't judging on the facts, the appeal was denied, but there was a procedural that allowed it to move forward. So this isn't, they're not getting a vindication on their parental strategy of not actually taking medical issues seriously with their child, or waiting until it's too late. The child was brain dead by the time that paramedics arrived after he stopped breathing. So that's not really what happened here. It's a procedural. And I agree with Christy. I think it should go to a retrial if there's a procedural error, or if the instructions to the jury were done improperly. But the whole case is so grotesque.
I find it hard as a parent watching him give these interviews and seeing his wife in the background with their other kids.
Yeah.
Because I fear for them too.
Let them never catch a cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Amazon and Starbucks, they've hit out at a decision to impose a new tax on firms based in Seattle to help fight homelessness. Amazon, the U.S. city's number one employer, said that this levy could put future expansion on hold in the region. The city of Seattle is saying, yeah, listen, we could make about $47 million for affordable housing. Christy, is it something that Toronto should look at?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I think I need to know a lot more about this and know a lot more about how responsive and how responsible the Seattle City government is. It's a big, big step to make specific sort of tax levies upon certain kinds of companies to pay for homelessness that you sort of indirectly are saying they created with their big earning employees, you know, driving up the price of houses, etc. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe we should look at it, but I would look at it long and hard before recommending it.
Amanda, maybe we look at it after Amazon gets here.
Well, yeah, come here, Amazon. We have a tax for you. The one thing I'll say is I'm not in favor of these kinds of things. I think, for example, like this $250 a head, they're calling it a head tax, which is its own special challenge, actually penalizes employment, right? Which is, if you think about it, that's fine on someone that makes, like an engineer that makes $150K a year or whatever. what this does is someone who's an assistant or just starting at a new job, that's a much higher percentage of their pay and means that there'll be less of those employees. So I actually think this is totally going to backfire. I think, you know, municipal governments sort of grabbing at this kind of stuff. Yes, they don't have enough powers to levy funds, but I think it should be pay to play, like around like levies for if you drive on a highway, you should pay for that, like that kind of thing, not just random tax grabs with governments.
I mean, this is an important case for Toronto to be watching since we are making a play for HQ2. And I think a lot of the other places at HQ2 are watching this really closely as well. I mean, this was a concern when we were making that bid, was the fact that if Amazon came in here, they come in with high-paying jobs. I mean, they're talking about quite a substantial amount of jobs potentially if Toronto was successful coming into the area. We're already having affordability challenges. We're already having access to housing issues in the GTA. I mean, this just is an issue that they had there. I will say, though, on the municipality, I do, well, if this is the right public policy lever to pull, I do appreciate them trying to actually say, listen, you are a contributor to this challenge, you're a member of this community, and you have a role to play in helping out with our housing challenge that we have. And it's not just Amazon, it's, you mean, Nordstrom's, it's Starbucks, it's a lot of the other players that actually drive up income costs, which actually drive up housing prices, and saying that we need to find some sort of a solution, because homelessness is one of the highest rates in Seattle.
What if we just start taxing Starbucks now? Just all the Starbucks locations in Toronto.
How long would it
possibly take?
What if we start to build some supportive housing, which governments have been promising
right.
for decades?
How about we point
that's
the finger back
the
at
solution.
The yeah. people who have screwed this up from yeah. day
and
one.
And don't penalize jobs. Well, like, that's
one,
crazy.
Well, one thing that this is, though, it's the same thing when a private company wants an arena. They do this and they play city against city. So they're saying, we're not going to expand because this 26 cents per hour fee is going to be charged here. We're going to go next door and we're going to build a tower in the next jurisdiction until they get a more favorable rate. Can they afford it? Yes. Should they pay for it? That's a different debate. But this is not new in terms of private companies. Like, go and
this is a new tax
misspelled.
Being imposed on an existing Absolutely. Company that's been contributing to that corporate. Yeah. Like, I think this is ridiculous, frankly.
Amanda Galbraith, Trevor Mayo, Christy Blatcher, great stuff today. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Thank you.